Big show is well underway. My name is Pat Steinberg, and Jason Lackenfor is with us from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Our NFL insider joins us every Friday on the program. Mr. Lackenfor, as always, a pleasure. How are you, my man?
I'm doing all right. How are you, bud?
Doing well. And looking forward to tomorrow and Sunday because we've got our final Saturday of football this year. And let's jump in with both feet. Let's get right to the matchups and start with Philadelphia and Atlanta, where the Falcons are favored on the road in Philly. But who do you like in this game?
I'm with conventional wisdom on this one. I'm with the Vegas line, and I'm with yeah, somebody told me a stat. Over 64% of the money, I think, is on Atlanta in this game. And a lot of times that would scream out that, wait a minute, you know, it's not that easy to pick these games, and conventional wisdom is probably wrong. And maybe that will be the case. But I can't make a case for Philadelphia winning this game unless it's based around them just having an absolutely lights-out defensive game, which, you know, they're possibly capable of. And we've seen them do it at times this year, but that was when they had an MVP quarterback, and that was when they were able to, you know, play complimentary football and have a guy like Carson Wentz make big play after big play. So that's not there right now. Nick Foles has been a marginal quarterback at best, especially during their second stint in Philadelphia. And, you know, there's going to be there's going to be a lot that they're up against there. You know, more experienced team in Atlanta, an MVP, former MVP quarterback, a defense of the Falcons that's gotten better really kind of through the season and especially lately has been very good. Little bit of travel for the Falcons, and I guess that's not ideal, but I wouldn't bet against them in this spot. I just feel like Atlanta, things are falling into place for them a little bit. I think they're catching Philadelphia at the right time. I'd like Philly more if they actually weren't the one seed and they played last week, mm-hmm. and Foles or somebody showed something then, and they sort of established some confidence against a wild card team a week ago. I don't think that bye actually did them any favors.
So that's the first game on Saturday. The second game is the one that seems like the most colossal of the mismatches. You have not been a big Titans believer all year, Jason, and
no.
Now they've got the New England Patriots. I would imagine that your lack of belief in Tennessee remains in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think a 14-point spread, that's fairly significant for a playoff game. You don't see that every day. And I think it accurately depicts the magnitude of the discrepancy between these teams. You've got the arguably the greatest coach of all time against Mike Mularkey. You've got arguably the greatest quarterback of all time against Marcus Mariota, who threw more picks than touchdowns this year. You know, no DeMarco Murray, a Tennessee defense that's very much so-so. You know, the pass rush at times looked pretty good down the stretch, but they don't do anything that's otherworldly that, you know, really stands out from the pack. I think New England, excuse me, coming off that bye with all that, you know, nonsense from the ESPN story and everything else, you know, this is the kind of thing that they coalesce around and start jamming it down people's throats, like Spygate, like Deflategate, how they responded to those things. I think we're looking for more of the same here.
Then we move to Sunday's games, and we'll start with Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. The Jaguars beat Pittsburgh and picked Ben Roethlisberger off four times in their Week 5 matchup during the regular season. But how do you see things going when these two teams meet in the playoffs?
Well, they better do it again if they want to win this game, because Jacksonville's offense is – and even in that game, you know, they won big, and so if you didn't watch the game, you might kind of just think, oh, well, Jacksonville really moved the ball. Nah, Bortles like 9 of 22 or something for 180 yards. I mean, it was not significant. Literally, all the scoring was set up by the defense. I don't know that they can expect to do that again in a playoff atmosphere at Heinz Field with a Steelers team that's going to be quite healthy and obviously refreshed after that bye, which they absolutely needed to get Antonio Brown back. I don't like this matchup for Jacksonville. They struggled against a very limited Bills offense a week ago. I mean, they struggled to distance themselves from that team. Tyrod doesn't turn it over too much, and that you know, allowed Buffalo to stay in the game. As long as Ben doesn't duplicate his performance from, you know, 3 months ago against these guys, I don't see Jacksonville having a chance to win the game. Maybe they keep it relatively close. I don't think Fournette is a dynamic enough back to win this game himself. And as long as the Steelers aren't handing the ball away on the other side, I think that they'll find some joy through Le'Veon Bell. I mean, Jacksonville's corners are shut down, and I'm not trying to slight their defense at all. But Pittsburgh can beat you in different ways. I think they could screen you to death with Le'Veon Bell. And Jacksonville's been susceptible on the ground this year to big plays, and I think they'll run it up the gut against them a little bit too.
And the final game of the weekend is the second NFC divisional game, New Orleans on the road in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, this to me is probably the game of the weekend. You know, it's two teams that have played quality football for the better part of the year. Both seem to be pretty healthy for this contest, except for the fact that, you know, Minnesota's on a guy who came into the year as their third-string quarterback. But obviously, Keenum's played like anything but that. And obviously, you know, we saw the injuries to Minnesota's run game early in the year. But Octavius Murray's done a fine job there. You know, we'll see. Minnesota had a few offensive linemen get dinged up late in the year. Will that be a big factor in this game? And look, can the Saints run the ball better than they did a week ago? They're going to have to be more balanced to beat Minnesota. Minnesota's defense is so good. They've got a couple of corners that they can put out there on an island if they have to. Obviously, both teams have two of the better pass rushers in the game in Cam Jordan and Everson Griffin. I think it's a very evenly matched game. You know, the Saints are built to play in the dome, so, you know, I think that fast track will be just fine with them. We saw Drew Brees have to put the team on his shoulders last week, and we all know he's capable of doing that still at this age. Now, can he do it week after week after week? We'll see. But I think it's the most compelling game of the weekend. It's something of a toss up for me. It smells like a game that goes down to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Keenum is if the Vikings lose, I don't think it's going to be because the quarterback all of a sudden, you know, Cinderella, and it's clock strikes midnight and, you know, his chariot turns into a pumpkin or whatever. I think he'll be okay.
He's Jason Lacanfora. He's our NFL insider, CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. As we set things up for the divisional round of the playoffs in the NFL, he joins us every Friday on the program. Two quick questions on the coaching front before we let you go, Jason. And the first is an article that you wrote a couple of days ago about John Harbaugh in Baltimore. And basically kind of the feeling, am I summing it up right when I say that, you know, maybe starting to get towards the end of the line if things don't start turning around for him?
This feels like the ending, the culmination of something and anything but a new beginning. Now, if owner Steve Bisciotti comes out of his, you know, powwow with team officials next week and gives Harbaugh a 3-4 year extension, then that's a different scenario entirely. And frankly, that's what I would do. I would re-empower a coach of that magnitude. But, you know, they gave him a baloney 1 year extension before the year, and he took it, which I don't think he should have. And so now he's sort of sitting there as a lame duck. You know, he didn't do anything inspirational or inspiring with his coaching staff, even though there was, you know, a possibility to do so. And it really strikes me and others as Harbaugh's last stand, where he's sick of firing coaches. He's sick of acquiescing to the personnel side and constantly making changes with his staff, while the same guys who were once clearly among the best in the NFL, and maybe they will be again, but their last five drafts, I mean, look at their drafts and their free agent signings since the Super Bowl. It hasn't been up to Ravens standards. The talent just isn't there. They're stuck with Flacco for another year because of his contract, even though it's time to draft a quarterback now. They're stuck with Jimmy Smith coming off an Achilles injury for another year because of the way his contract's structured. They don't have an abundance of draft picks to draft their way out of it. They don't have an abundance of cap space to buy their way out of it. They're stuck right there in the middle with the 16th pick again. And I think it's going to point to another middling season next year. And then John Harbaugh being out of there prior to the 2019 season, when he would be going into a lame duck year. And I don't see him signing any more little, you know, rinky-dink one-year extensions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they are at a critical point right now, the Baltimore Ravens. And we'll see if the owner comes out and does something – that sends a message to the fans that it's not going to be status quo, but the assumption around these parts right now is it is going to be status quo, and that status quo won't be nearly good enough next year.
And one final question, and that is New England's playing, and New England might be playing all the way until the Super Bowl this year, but whenever their season comes to an end, are we expecting both coordinators, Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, are we expecting both of them to be in head coaching positions next year?
Yeah, I absolutely am. And if that takes teams waiting into, you know, the second week of February to formally hire them, then so be it. There's not a whole lot left out there right now when you start looking at who's getting jobs. And who's really been in vogue and who teams have really wanted to talk to and guys who've had multiple interviews. You know, it's McDaniels, it's Shermer, it's Patricia, I mean, and then maybe a Munchak or a Jim Schwartz or a Steve Wilks. But I think that's really it in terms of the viable guys, and there's still four jobs out there. And teams are going to be willing to wait as long as they have to get a McDaniels or a Patricia, because they do seem, in the estimation of many of these clubs, who are hiring new coaches, to be the most ready, the best of the bunch. So, there's going to be change in New England, and it probably won't just be limited to those two, but it doesn't mean the dynasty's over. It doesn't mean the wheels are falling off. You know, it doesn't mean that people are running out of that building left and right because of it, you know, internal conflict or whatever.
No, these guys are both good coordinators, and they're getting head coaching jobs. That's what it is, right? Which is kind of the opposite of what some people might try to paint it as. Hey, Jason, as always, great stuff, my man. We will talk to you again on Tuesday as we look back on the divisional round. But thank you so much for setting us up. Always a pleasure.
Always my pleasure. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.